Hello and a very warm welcome to today's episode of Work Life Stories. I'm Anna Richards and today I'm pleased to be joined by Kyle Davies. Kyle is the owner and founder of Energy Flow Coaching, where he works with professionals who may be suffering from things like burnout, overwhelm, anxiety and stress, who want to get their lives back, regain their health and really make some big changes in their lives. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me today. Looking through your biography and preparation for this interview, I can see you're hugely well qualified in psychology and have decades of experience in coaching people in this area. However, I know your real interest in it came from your own experience of anxiety and depression in your late teens and early 20s, which must have been a very difficult time. And I wondered if we could start with you telling me a little bit about that time.
Hi, Anna. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Great to be here. Oof, decades of experience make me sound really old, which I obviously am. Going back to my early years of experience and anxiety, I suppose back then, I didn't really know what I was experiencing. I had physical, emotional, mental symptoms, and didn't really know what I was experiencing, which kind of came and went. And I didn't know really what to do about it. And it lasted probably around age 17 to 24. Now, on reflection, there were a number of things that were involved in that. I have a hearing loss, which is a genetic condition which kicked in my late teens. I didn't know that at the time. I just knew there was something wrong with my ears. And so I went kind of progressively deaf through my basically late teens, I guess through to now. And so I wear hearing aids. So that was definitely a contributory factor. I think, I was 17 in 1987. And that was a time of, around that age, I guess, it is a time of change. It's a time when you're becoming a young adult. I was certainly going out drinking, boozing, sleeping less. I was definitely, trying to put on a mask, in a sense, to project an image of who I thought I should be at the time. So I think in terms of, well, what might have contributed to the anxiety and depression that I felt, well, I think it was a combination of all of those things. And I think that's probably the case for most people. We often want to, in our Western medicalized view of things, we like to identify single causes for problems. And, I think when it comes to many of the health challenges that we experience these days, there are multiple primary causes. And that was definitely the case for me. And I think that was something that I just didn't understand at the time. I think probably lots of people don't understand that now. So, I went through kind of bouts, I suppose, during those times. The anxiety first, the depression was more in my kind of early 20s. Part of that was situational, in as much as I went from being an undergraduate at Swansea University, where I was surrounded by lots of friends, then to being a postgraduate at Leicester University, where I was doing research, living on my own and working on my own, which just didn't suit me. So that will have contributed to, the experiences that I had. And because of the anxiety that I'd experienced, I would tend to avoid things that I thought might contribute to anxiety for me, which, again, I didn't realize at the time that that would just exacerbate things. So I went into my shell rather than making, more effort to come out and do things and being more involved. I went inwards. So it was only really, I guess, as I moved into my 20s that I decided I wanted to uncover what was going on. To a certain extent, as my life circumstances changed, then my symptoms, if you will, receded. And it was me then having a desire to figure out, well, what had been going on with me, I suppose, that led me to the work that I now do.
Thank you for telling me about that time. It's really, really interesting to completely understand a multitude of factors that affect something like this. First few you mentioned, particularly the drinking, sleep, hearing, all very physical symptoms affecting your mental health there. What did you do back then to try and help yourself? Or was it, has it been very much in retrospect that you've explored it? Because I'm conscious the world, is much better at recognizing mental health and well-being and how people can improve their resilience these days. But not to make you sound old again, but back in my day, back in your day when we were younger, it was much less talked about. Did you reach out for support at all at the time?
I did in my early 20s. So I'm 54 now. So we are talking, 30 odd years ago. And yeah, it wasn't something that was talked about at all. So I was, I guess, very unique. I assume in my peer group going for therapy when I was probably 23, 24, something like that. So I went to a couple of therapists. One was useless, one was good. And that kind of gave me some insights and some help. But in my earlier years, well, I just kind of managed it really. As I say, I would avoid things that I thought might contribute to anxiety for me, but it wasn't as if they were hugely specific things in that regard either. So it was difficult to understand. I had felt that there was a transition. I remember being kind of 19 or 20 and being kind of baffled in a way and thinking, well, but I always used to be kind of chilled out, didn't I? What's happened to me? There was definitely a sense of what's happened to me, what's happening to me. I'm not sure that anybody knew. I spoke to my mother about it at the time, and I'm not sure she knew exactly what was going on with me. But yeah, and like, it's probably the same people now to a certain extent who are teenagers, although we do, maybe it isn't, because there is, as you just rightly said, we talk about these things these days, so that awareness of these challenges are there. Just coming back on your point, I've never been a fan of the idea of mental and physical health challenges as being separate things. As far as I'm concerned, they're kind of all one. Even though there are organic problems or structural problems that we can have in the body or brain, I think that, when we're talking about anxiety and depression, they are kind of umbrella terms for quite a diverse range of physical, psychological, emotional, mental symptoms, which can affect people in a whole variety of ways. So yeah, those are the things I did. I went for therapy in my early 20s. Not a huge amount, which but when it started for me, well, yeah, I just blundered on through, really.
Interesting. And so you've talked about two university experiences there. I'm interested in when your personal experience and your professional expertise kind of married. Were both your degrees, were they both around psychology?
Yeah. So I was an undergrad in psychology in Swansea and then a postgraduate in psychology in Leicester. But that's quite different from therapy. So you don't do anything. I didn't do anything that was therapy related at university. It was only when I came out of university. And then I did some counselling training initially before working in management consulting and becoming a occupational psychologist.
And then moving forward in your personal journey there, I suppose the therapy helped. Did the change in your circumstances help? Because you talked about working alone in your post-grad world. What else do you sort of contribute to your feeling starting to feel a bit better as life moved on a little bit?
I think there was definitely something around living in my head. So I think there were probably two contributory factors to where what kept me in an anxiety state or kept the symptoms coming back. One was avoidance of things that, so shutting down my life to a degree, living within limits, if you will. But the second thing was living in my head. And I think it's one of the things that the more educated you are, I think in our country, in our culture, the more time you spend in your head. So I just analyzed myself and everything to death. And I think I had a realization that I needed to get out of my head. I needed to get into my body. I needed to be more present in the now moment. And I can remember in my, early 20s, learning to breathe, learning to be present, which of course people would call mindfulness now. That was a big part of it for me. Just allowing myself to be present rather than analyzing and holding myself tight. So I think that was definitely the start of the journey, because whilst I don't think it was excessive thinking and churning that necessarily caused anxiety for me, I think it was something that amplified things, and it kind of made me worse because I just restricted myself, if that makes sense.
Absolutely makes sense. And tell me about your business and your approach now. And I wonder to what extent you have drawn on those experiences to help others in your current expertise.
I mean, certainly I've drawn hugely on it. It was, I think that, it was probably the catalyst for me moving from a management consulting area into therapy. I now do both. But in terms of my approach to working with people with these sorts of health challenges now, yeah, I do draw on that, because I think that a basic principle of the way I work is that we need to let ourselves flow. And we very often get in our own way. We tinker with ourselves too much. And I think we live in a world where we try to project an image of who we think we should be. We go through life, and in order to fit in with life, we alter and change ourselves, and we prevent our own natural flow. So we lose touch with what I would call our true selves. And when that happens, it's almost like there's a wisdom within us that gives us a tap on the shoulder to say, you're off track here. So the way I look at health challenges and the sorts of things I work with from a therapeutic setting, which is anxiety, depression, chronic fatigue, and chronic pain, is that our body will let us know when we're off track or out of balance. So I look at the symptoms we experience as messengers. Your body's trying to tell you something. And rather than adopting a usual kind of Western approach of, oh, there's something wrong with me, give me something to get rid of my symptoms, I need to get away from this now, I look at it from a perspective of, well, actually, I'm somehow out of balance. I'm misaligned, if you will. I've lost touch with my true self, my own flow. And if I can get back in touch with that, if I can find my way back there and begin to flow again, then health will ensue. And I know it sounds a bit woolly, but that's the essence of it. There's lots of things that we do where we get in our own way, and we prevent ourselves from, finding that flow, finding our voice, finding our true self. So it's not necessarily a particularly easy journey back. But when we come back into ourselves, and of course, part of the thing of coming back into the now moment helps with that, because it gives you an opportunity to feel. Because that's one of the things that, in my journey, being up in my head, is when you're up in your head, you get cut off from your emotions and your feelings. And it's crucial that we allow ourselves to pay attention to those without shouting them out with our, or drowning them out with our head as it chatters on. So, that's the kind of, I suppose, the way I generally approach things, and taking from the experience that I had, it's almost needing to be more functional, more natural, more human, getting back in touch with ourselves and letting ourselves be and flow rather than analyzing everything to death. And one of the things that we tend to do again in our culture is we have a natural baseline level of thinking. And when we believe there's a problem, our thinking naturally kind of ramps up. And we think about things more, we analyze things more. And at one level, there's a constructive element to our thinking, but very often it's destructive when we ruminate and we churn. And then we create more problems for ourselves. I mean, because the key bit is understanding the difference between those two.
It's really interesting, I think, actually, because it's quite a balance that, isn't it? And I'm thinking about, all the pressures of modern life and, of course, the impact of technology, social media. There's just the constant comparisons that we make with people's what appears to be impossibly perfect lives and the benefits of more content, dialogue, awareness of all these things without letting it take over and be sort of overthought and overanalyzed in the way you describe. It must be a very difficult balance to strike, as it is for all of us in everyday life. But if it's become problematically so that that they've reached out for support, that's quite a challenge. And do you think that modern life is having a negative impact on exactly this sort of problem that you describe of overanalysis?
I think our modern culture is reasonably toxic. I think that from an evolutionary perspective, we, for hundreds of thousands of years, we lived in a very similar type of environment. We lived in small tribes where we probably went to bed when it was dark, got up when it was light, did a bit of hunting and fishing, had a fight with a tribe down the road. In the last 100 years or so, our environment has changed it just enormously. And in the last 20 years, and it feels like the rate of change in our culture and environment is dramatic, exponentially so. And I think the evolution of culture and environment and society and technology is far exceeded body and brain. So I think we're in an environment that doesn't particularly suit us. So yeah, I do think that though all of those things you said, from social media to work pressures to needing to, match ourselves with our perceived expectations of life, creates a huge number of problems. Stress being the biggest, because, as I say, the way we evolved was our stress response was designed to keep us alive and deal with short-term stresses, and our mortality for hundreds of thousands of years was probably under threat on a daily or weekly basis. But what we have now is not so much of these, the kind of short-term stresses, but lots and lots of low-grade stresses in relation to work and family and life and paying the mortgage and getting this project done for work and all these sorts of things which chip away at us. And with the low-grade stresses that we have, we end up overthinking everything, usually churning, ruminating, making things worse for ourselves, and losing touch, I think, with our own basic needs. And I think we lose, as I said, I feel we lose touch with ourselves and our own natural flow. And when that happens, then things begin to go wrong. As I say, my belief is that, well, when things go wrong, it's our body telling us that we are somehow out of alignment, and we need to pause, reflect, and look and get back in touch with the essence of who we are. And as we do that, then we thrive and flourish, because I think that's our natural kind of way to be. I think we're designed to thrive. If that isn't happening, I think it's because we kind of lost touch with ourselves.
Yeah, so interesting. And I wonder what your thoughts are on working from home as well in all of this. You talked about in your postgraduate working alone, I think I'm right in saying didn't suit you particularly. And I think, obviously we're a couple of years post-pandemic. The corporate world is big topic. I think there was a big sort of push to encourage people back to the office. There probably still is, but I think there's recognition that actually forcing people back, full time certainly isn't going to work. But also that, I've seen quite a lot of commentary saying, well, actually, is this we may be very convenient and has lots of benefits working from home, but does it have some real downsides on people's well-being being at home all the time? Do you think that's really about us as individuals and who it suits and who it doesn't? Or do you have a particular feeling about working from home and whether that's a positive thing anymore?
I think it's a probably an individual thing. And the reason I say that is, so if I can answer the question in a couple of ways, first bit for me is that, and I'm saying it's an individual thing because I have this belief that we do need to look inwards and pay attention to ourselves and understand what's right for us. I think part of our modern culture is that we spend far too much time looking outside of ourselves for the answers. What should I be doing? What are the 10 steps to losing weight and the 5 steps to getting fit? Or, how should I work? Oh, I should be doing this or should be doing that. But I think it's important that we figure out and feel and sense what's right for us. So that's the first bit. The second bit is that, yeah, I think, again, as part of what we're experiencing now, people seem to be more disconnected despite being more connected. So even though we have these opportunities through technology to be connected, I'm not, it seems that people are more lonely and isolated than ever before. People don't seem to kind of get together like they used to. So I think that it's important for people to get a sense of what's right for them. One of the things that we have is that people are very seem to be very busy. There is, there's this sense of needing to rush around all the time to get things done, be that work and family and the mix of all that. So if you're working from home, well, you don't have to commute. So that saves some time. So, well, there's a plus in that regard. But of course, if you're isolated and you're not actually meeting, then that can cause problems. There's no doubt in my experience of going into organizations where there's no chance and opportunity for meetings or just chats over coffee, there's a negative impact of that. I think there's real benefit from people getting together because we're human beings who are designed to connect. And if we don't have that time, if we don't create that time to connect, problems will ensue, or they usually do. So I think, again, it can be difficult to reflect on what's going on with, oneself, but it's incredibly important that we do that. How am I? How do I feel? How am I performing? How is my experience of life? Am I feeling as good as I could? Because if it's, if there are doubts in there, then of course, then it's looking at, well, what's going on, what's changed, what might I need to change?
I'm wondering what sort of issues are you hearing about most frequently from clients or patients that you see at the moment? Are there sort of big themes that are arising from your current work?
I suppose there's kind of two broad areas, really. There's a lot in the therapy world about trauma. So that the lots of the people I work with will have experienced either developmental or complex trauma. That effectively means childhood trauma or possibly lots of small t traumas, which could be lots of stressors. So there's definitely a theme in that regard of people are recognizing that actually there've been more sort of small t traumas, lots of stresses in their lives, maybe more than they've recognized. So there's that as an issue. Since the pandemic, I've experienced lots of people talking about feeling lost, feeling disconnected, and just struggling in life. Who am I? Kind of thing. It's like there's a mass awakening that's going on, and people are looking around and thinking, "Hang about, I don't feel quite right." So there's, I don't think it's just a case that, right, well, we can now talk about anxiety and depression and other challenges more. That obviously is a factor, but I just think people, I think the nature of life and modern life is people are suffering more. And this relates again to what we were talking about before of the modern life not being well designed for us and us having something of a toxic culture. But so in terms of themes, I think, yeah, I think people are struggling with feeling just out of sorts, not knowing who they are, and looking for deeper meaning, I think, in life.
Interesting. Yeah, makes complete sense. And I'm conscious that a lot of this topic has traditionally been one that sits more naturally with women, that women might be more comfortable in this sort of therapeutic environment. Do you agree with that? Do you see a lot of men? I mean, I'm conscious that you being a man may be really, welcoming and men to come forward if they're in need of support. Are you finding that men are increasing their openness to this kind of world?
Yeah, and that there's a whole other area because I think that if I look back, say 10, 15 years ago, probably 90% of my clients were women, whereas now 50% are women. So I think men are kind of in crisis. I think what we've seen in the last 20, 30, 40 years is with the rise of feminism, and there's, obviously so many benefits to that. One of the things I think that's occurred as a result of that is men have kind of felt a little bit lost as to understanding who they are and their role. And we've had, a lot of talk of toxic masculinity. So it raises the question of, well, what is masculinity? And how do we embrace that? So I think from young men to older men, I've seen men in crisis. And again, I think there's two bits. I think one is that it's now okay for people to talk about these things. So it's okay for men to say, actually, I'm struggling. But I do think that men are struggling more. I think the whereas, the roles of, the masculine and feminine roles were defined a little bit more clearly, if you will, for my parents, things are very different now. So when I was growing up, my mother was a housewife, my father went out to work, and that was the case for most of my friends. Life is entirely different now. And I think men are trying to get a sense of, well, what does it mean to be a man? Who am I as a man? And how can we embrace it in a positive way? And I think that's something that affects men, and they may not necessarily be consciously aware of that, but I think there's a huge amount of, a huge struggle within men of trying to understand themselves. And trying to understand their positive role in society.
That's incredibly interesting. Thank you. Could you tell me a little bit about how you approach your therapy sessions with clients and patients that you see?
My approach is this idea of it's somatic in a way because it's coming back into the body, it's associating with emotions, intuitions. And learning to feel again and creating that balance between feeling and thinking rather than, trying to think one's way out of everything, if that makes sense. So as I've been saying, I guess my work is governed by, I guess, some key principles or ideas. One being that we're a complex system and that there are very often multiple primary causes to the symptoms that people experience, and then effects of those symptoms can become causes. So what I mean by that is if I, we reflect back to what I was saying about my anxiety, the fact that I was up in my head more and I would restrict my life and manage my life around symptoms, that actually created more symptoms. So you get that circular effect of the effect of having a health challenge, if we can call it that, can actually lead to more of the same. So I think that, in terms of my approach, it's understanding that, it's looking at symptoms as messengers. And if I'm dealing with somebody with chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, anxiety, or depression, I would say, right, well, symptoms are messengers and we need to understand it in that way. And it's a very practical way of looking at things. You know, there's a lot of science there, which I go into with people that I work with, and understanding what's going on in body and brain, because that's always very important, because there's usually a huge amount of fear surrounding the experience that a person is having. So knowing that what's taking place, the educational bit is very important. But once we've understood, oh, right, well, I can get that now. I can see why I'm getting those symptoms from the science perspective. It's then the sort of more psycho-spiritual bit is, well, understanding me and coming back to me and finding me, if that makes sense. And it's then using symptoms as the roadmap, if you will, because my body is going to let me know if something is not quite right. And again, that's quite different, I think, from the way we look at health. So if a person is experiencing, you know, anxiety or depression at work, well, their body is telling them something about the nature of their interaction with work, or possibly home as well. It probably is a complex mix. But it's understanding that, right, well, there's something going on. So rather than just looking for, right, well, I need something to get rid of these symptoms so that I feel okay again, it's looking at it from that perspective of, all right, well, I need to understand the message behind the symptoms. And in doing that, then we need to come back into the body and begin to feel, because the answers are there. You know, the answers lie within us. But we need to be able to look in the right place to find them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely does. Thank you. Perfect. And then I suppose a final question, Kyle, just thinking as we've discussed about the many stresses of modern life, background concerns of, you know, international conflict, all the way down to the sort of endless scrolling of social media, work stress, working from home, whatever it might be. Do you have any general advice for people who just want to boost their resilience to sort of cope with all of these stresses of modern life? Have you got any general advice that we could finish with?
Oh, that's a big question, isn't it? I think keep things simple, really. Pay attention to yourself. Pay attention to how you feel. Look inward and be a little bit more conscious of how you're impacted by things. You know, there are lots of basic things we can do in terms of resilience. You know, and it's always better to start with the low hanging fruit. You know, make sure you're getting a good diet, you're moving your body, you're sleeping well, you're getting plenty of daylight. You know, those basic things. The emotional stuff that I work with people is usually a little bit more complicated to work with. But there are lots of basic things that people can do. It's interesting you talking about what goes on in the news. I would say, well, we are going to be influenced by what we place our attention upon. And whilst we can't control life, we can direct where our attention goes. And our attention is hugely powerful. So, you know, where we place our attention is playing a role in the experience that we're creating for ourselves. You know, if we're continually thinking about, talking about, looking at, reading about certain things, then our internal experience is going to reflect that. So I think it's very easy to think of ourselves as passive observers of life, victims of circumstance. I think it's far, far more empowering to look at it from a perspective of, well, I'm playing a role in the creation of the experience that I'm having. What I do, how I act, what I say, what I put my focus of attention upon, it plays a huge role in the internal experience that I have. My view is that for the most part, people are going through life trying to manage their internal experience. The only reason we do whatever we do is for the feeling experience that we have. If we didn't have an internal experience, we wouldn't do anything. And human beings are generally motivated to get away from discomfort towards comfort. So when we reflect on almost anything we do, those are the reasons why we do those things. So being mindful of the role that we play in that, and the role that, we play by, as I say, through what we do, what we speak about, what we think about, what we put our attention upon, those are all influencing and impacting our internal feeling experience. And we can direct our experience a little bit more by paying attention to those things.
Thank you so much, Kyle. I think that's the perfect point to finish our conversation today. I really appreciate you taking the time to tell us about your professional expertise, but also your very personal experience back when you were younger. So thank you so much for your time. And thank you to all our listeners as well. I hope you found this as interesting as I have done. If you'd like to find out more about what we're doing this Mental Health Awareness Week and in our program more generally, please do visit worklifecentral.com and stay tuned for more coming soon from Work Life Stories. Thank you and goodbye.